Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
This week we focus on what is happening with the upcoming Academy Awards on March 2nd. Up first, our movie critic, Gray Drake, a senior editor at Rotten Tomatoes. Gray gives us a scoop on who's looking good to win and who could be heading home empty-handed. We then chat with fashion expert Parmal Gahunia about what color trends we might see at the Oscars and what actors and actresses will most likely be on the best dressed lists this year. We cap things off with an Academy Award voter, Reba Merrill, who gives us an inside look at the voting process and why movie companies campaign for their films to win.
Capture your need for sound.
Tis the season for award shows. Recently, the Golden Globes captured everyone's attention as the first major award show of 2014, and now we are only weeks away from the granddaddy of them all, the Academy Awards. To talk about all things glamorous and what might happen at this year's Oscars is our movie critic from Rotten Tomatoes, senior editor Gray Drake. Gray, thanks for hanging out with us on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, it's good to talk to you, Kelly.
So, you know, I wanted to talk a bit about the recent Golden Globes. Obviously, it's been several weeks now, but those Golden Globe winners, I think, are often an indicator of what could transpire at the Oscars. So, you know, is American Hustle, Dallas Buyers Club, are they going to be at the top of the list, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not so much the Golden Globes that alone that determine the winners. It's actually all the other award ceremonies that determine the winners. And that's the one that people outside of my industry don't pay much attention to. But you can kind of see as you Google different award ceremonies given by guilds in Hollywood that, you know, people tend to favor the same films as the season goes on. So American Hustle, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, these are all going to be big winners, regardless of what they win on Academy Awards night. 12 Years a Slave, too. Can't ever forget that great movie.
I wanted to actually ask you about 12 Years a Slave. Do you think that in a certain way it's been passed over this award season?
No, I don't think that it's been passed over. I think that it has gotten a lot of great awards. It has gotten a lot of attention. It is a movie that's really in the forefront of people's minds. Is it winning everything? No, but I wouldn't consider it passed over at all. It's gotten the Critics' Choice Award, it's gotten Golden Globe Awards, it's gotten all kinds of awards. So I think that they should be very happy with the recognition and very excited for Oscar night, because there will be more.
Talk to us about Jared Leto, because you were mentioning before about all those other awards that a lot of people don't know about. I had read an article that said he's won over 30 for this role. What does that mean?
Yeah, that just means he did a great job, and everybody knows it, and nobody is shy to give him an award. He played Rayon in Dallas Buyers Club, and there's so many things about that role that are like a landmine for an actor. You know, this character is suffering from AIDS, first of all. This character is a transgendered person, which is another thing that's caused a lot of really great conversation around these communities and how they're portrayed in Hollywood, what actors should or shouldn't be portraying them. And I think it's really a positive thing. I'm so excited that Jared Leto is getting this much recognition, because he's been great for a long time, and we seem to have forgotten that. And Dallas Buyers Club reminded us.
Speaking of Dallas Buyers Club and Matthew McConaughey, you know, this time around, do you think he's in a bit of a renaissance, if you will, with his career? Because, like, for so many years, he was just doing these rom-coms, and now he's, like, back in the thick of it. Do you feel that?
I'm sorry, were you referring to the McConaissance?
Yeah. Is that what people are calling it?
It is.
Oh, I
didn't even know that. It absolutely is.
Oh, my God, that's funny. I had no idea.
Yeah, because you're right. Matthew McConaughey made a whole bunch of stupid Kate Hudson movies. No offense to the great Kate Hudson, but her movies were dumb. And they certainly weren't award-worthy. And then all of a sudden, as the story goes, McConaughey said to his team, "You guys, I'm making a change. You are probably not going to make as much money. And if you want to jump ship, then go ahead." And then he released The Lincoln Lawyer. And that was a great movie, and he didn't even have to take his shirt off. And everything that he's done since then has also been great. So it's exciting to see him winning so many awards. And, I mean, because who gives better speeches than Matthew McConaughey? Like, he's so charming, it's ridiculous. So I'm glad that he's experiencing so much success.
How are we feeling about Jennifer Lawrence this year, just in the grand scheme of things? Because you and I obviously had such a great conversation about her last year, and obviously she won an Oscar last year. Are people still feeling like she's the darling of the industry on a certain level?
Yeah, absolutely. She never stops being... the odds are ever in her favor, let's put it that way, because she's so genuine and so unaffected by this hullabaloo that goes along with being as famous as she is. She's sweet and she's fun and she's really genuinely lovely. I don't think she's going to win. I'd put her as a strong second choice, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, it just changes minute by minute. The exciting thing about this year's Oscars, which is not something I could say every year because let's be honest, they're usually pretty boring and awful.
Right.
Anybody could win this year. There's a lot of conversation in certain key categories as to who in the world is going to take home this trophy. And for Best Supporting Actress, I'd say it's Jennifer Lawrence is one of my top two choices. Mm-hmm. I thought she was so good in American Hustle, and she really livened up that movie a lot. That was already pretty bonkers to start with. I've heard excellent points in favor of Lupita Nyong'o from 12 Years a Slave, who's also a very, very new actress as far as feature films go. And she was so, so amazing in that movie. And, you know, Hollywood loves a talented newcomer.
Right. This is true. I wanted to take you slightly off topic for just a sec, just because we were talking about Jennifer Lawrence. And forgive me if I'm a little bit out there with this, but I wanted your take on this. A few years ago, we were talking quite a bit about Emma Stone, and she was like the darling of all things. And I feel like she's gone away for a bit. Will she be back?
Yeah, because she's a great actress. She's been busy. She's been a little bit out of the spotlight because she's been working on Amazing Spider-Man, I assume. And so the good news is that I think when you've got it all as a talent, you know, you've got like the ability, you've got the looks, you've got the personality. You've got the good heart that she seems to have. I think that really endures in our industry. So she'll work as long as she wants to.
Okay. Joining us on the show is Gray Drake, senior editor at Rotten Tomatoes, rottentomatoes.com. Also our movie critic here on the Kelly Alexander Show. Gray, is there any category that you think is a lock? Like, I know you said there's sort of up for debates with some of these major categories, but like when it comes to best director or even leading actress, everyone has been talking about Kate Blanchett. Like, is this her year?
Yeah, this is the only category where I don't have to think about it that much, is best actress. Kate Blanchett in Blue Jasmine was so good and has won every single award. And I think that one is the only one I feel confident in making a solid pick. But if you haven't seen Blue Jasmine, it is such a great performance. And the movie is just fine. And with anyone else, I think it would have just been fine. But with her, it was extraordinary.
Wow. And best director, where are you feeling that going?
You know, that'll probably go to Alfonso Cuarón for Gravity. Gravity is a movie that left me and a lot of critics just completely floored, because technically it was amazing and the story was very poignant and Sandra Bullock was magnificent and it hit on every level. And so really, I think that's due largely in part to the uniting force of Alfonso Cuarón. And he won the Directors Guild Award, which is a very strong indicator of what film will win Best Picture. So although I think 12 Years a Slave is giving Gravity really solid competition, statistically, the odds are in Gravity's favor.
In any other year, would you have thought that Sandra would have been the strong contender in this, you know, category? I know you said we talked about Kate sort of being the lock. It seems like it's a really strong category this year. And is it too soon for Sandra to win again?
They're all really strong categories. That's the thing. I mean, in a year where Robert Redford, Hollywood legend, doesn't get a nomination, that's a strong year. So Sandra Bullock is great and has won Best Actress Oscar before. So yeah, any other year you'd go, oh, sure, you know, give her another one. What the heck? But this year, it's every category is really, really strong. It's pretty amazing, and it's making our jobs both fun and difficult because there's sort of nothing for us to be an expert on this year because it's really up to the voters.
Any surprises at all this year, both good or bad, that really sticks out to you? I know everyone's been talking about, like you had mentioned, the Robert Redford and the Tom Hanks. Is there anything sort of undercurrent that we might not hear out in sort of the general public?
Well, I'm disappointed that Oprah didn't get a Best Supporting Actress nomination. I thought she was the best thing to come out of The Butler, which was a very imperfect movie, but a very poignant and meaningful movie to me. It really affected me emotionally. So I was really sad that Oprah didn't get a nomination, and I was able to lock eyes with her at one point at the Critics' Choice Awards and just telepathically exchange my condolences and disbelief with her.
Mm-hmm.
I know she got it. I know she got it because, you know, I'm pretty positive she really does have the powers of telepathy. But yeah, I mean, there are, as always, the smallest, most interesting movies I saw this year don't get any kind of recognition from the Academy. Not surprising. It's not pretty run-of-the-mill average for them. One of them that I'd like to mention, if you're looking for a movie on DVD that is emotionally touching, that feels very real, that is so flawlessly acted, that you don't even know that you're watching a fictional movie almost, it's called Short Term 12.
Never heard of it.
Exactly. It's starring Brie Larson, who's this young actress who, she's in Scott Pilgrim versus the World and The Spectacular Now and Don John, and she's always in all these great movies, and she's so amazing. She's just this like 23-year-old girl who, she was a daughter in the United States of Tara as well. That's where most people will know her.
Okay.
She's so good, and this movie is about kind of a foster care organization and just the people that work there and the kids that have to stay there. And it just floored me. I got to see it in the summer of 2013 at the LA Film Festival. It was amazing. And she was amazing. And she's gotten a lot of recognition from critics, organizations, the Independent Spirit Awards, like those kinds of awards. So I really always want to mention that one because I just think people should watch it if they want, you know, if they want to see a movie that leaves an impression, you know. But it is a smaller movie. It's a thinking person's movie. So, you know, not if you're in the mood for explosions. Don't watch it then.
I wanted to mention, you know, since the last time we've spoken, you have started co-hosting a television show with, you know, I think everyone's favorite critic in a way, because we've known about him for so, so long, is Leonard Maltin. Tell us about the show and what you guys have been discussing this award season.
My mind is blown that I get to co-host a show with the amazing Leonard Maltin. He is he's a magnificent human being and one of my favorite critics since I was just becoming aware of criticism in general. And so we're co-hosting the award season 2014 Winners and Losers, and that is airing on the Reels channel, REELZ, mm-hmm. which is a channel that a lot of people are like, do I even get that channel? And you probably do, is actually the answer. So we're discussing all the same stuff you and I've talked about today. We're talking about who's been nominated, who got overlooked, hence the losers part, and that will begin airing on February 15th, that Saturday, and it will air through the rest of February at all different times, just up until the night before the Oscars, which I believe is on March 2nd. So you can check it out and see what the great Leonard Maltin thinks is going to take home the gold, and you get to see me yell when I disagree. And yeah, please watch. And also, feel free to tweet the Reels channel, and that's at REELZ channel, and let them know that you watched.
That's awesome. Well, I want to thank you for that and letting us know about it. And before I let you bounce, I have to ask you this, because you and I always talk about who's hosting the Oscars, and because you even mentioned it off the top that most often it's long and boring. Obviously, our girl Ellen, back for her second, you know, performance with this. Do you think it's going to go well?
I love Ellen. And I don't remember, I've put out of my head her first time hosting the Oscars, but I remember being a little underwhelmed by it.
Mm-hmm.
So as compared to last year's Oscars with probably the polar opposite personality hosting in Seth MacFarlane, this year I think the jokes will be a lot safer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they are not really going to cause any stir afterwards by certain groups. we're probably not going to get any songs about boobs.
Right.
And is that a good thing? Well, ultimately, I really like it when we keep it classy, San Diego.
Yeah.
But Seth MacFarlane's Oscars was very fun, and you never really knew it was going to happen. So I think this year we'll probably revert back to a much more traditional format and probably a little more boring as well, sadly.
Do you think we'll ever see Tina and Amy do it? I know that they've said they don't want to, but do you think they'll ever pay them enough to do it?
I doubt it. I mean, if they say they don't want to do it, they probably are specifically saying it for a reason.
Okay.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of pressure. And the Golden Globes are a little different because it just doesn't have the same vibe and work up and stuff. So I don't know. I agree and trust in anything that they say. If they told me 2 + 2 = 5, then I'd start believing that was true. But I mean, maybe it's the world's smartest coy act.
Right.
Where they keep saying, no, 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 and then they get paid a gajillion dollars and they'll do it. I mean, which I would be really happy with because I think there's such magic together on the Golden Globes. It would be really nice.
And where are you going to be, Gray, during the telecast?
Thankfully, this year, I get to be in my sweatpants drinking champagne in my house.
Awesome. Very good.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
And I hope we'll be able to maybe have you on after to sort of let us know what you think about all the winners and stuff.
Perfect.
That
Done.
Would be excellent. So that is our movie critic, Gray Drake. Again, she's a senior editor at Rotten Tomatoes, rottentomatoes.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Our very own fashion expert, Parmal Gahunia, joins us to talk about what we can expect to see at this year's Academy Awards happening in Hollywood in just a couple of weeks. Parmal, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks for having me back and happy award season.
Exactly. We are in the thick of it and we're so happy to have you on because I think fashion almost plays more of a part than the actual awards when it comes to these types of events because everyone's always so concerned about what people are wearing. And obviously fashion is such an important piece of Hollywood because then at some point it trickles down to us on some level or another. So in the grand scheme of things, to sort of open things up, what do you think will be the major trends we could see at this year's Oscars?
I think glamour is always the biggest trend for the Oscars. I feel like we have a few months leading up into Oscar season, you know, with various award shows pretty much every week almost, starting in January. So I think everyone saves their wow factor dress for the Oscars, although there's been quite a few really awesome dresses all award season. But I think glamour is always the biggest thing and kind of showstopper items are always the big trends. But I mean, in terms of colors, I think we're going to see a lot of whites. I think we're going to see royal blues and like shades of blue, pastels for sure, because we're going into pre-spring.
Yep.
I think metallics have been kind of all over. And anyone who's really worn a metallic anything dress for the last few award shows, like whether it's SAG or Golden Globes, has really been a winner on the red carpet. So I think metallics, you know, silvers, golds, and lots of sequins. There's going to be lots of feathers and lace. I think it'll be more interesting this award season than it ever has before because sometimes people tend to play it safe and go, you know, to those designers that you know are always going to give you a beautiful, elegant dress. But I hope to see a little bit more risk-taking this time around.
There are so many great ladies showing up to this event, like nominees Cate Blanchett, Jennifer Lawrence, Sandra Bullock. The list goes on and on.
I know.
Do you think they're going to play it classic, or could they potentially go left of center? I know you said off the top that the Academy Awards are very classy and classic, but do you think anyone will be risky?
I do, actually, and I knew you were going to ask me this, Kelly. So actually, my prediction list, which I hope is well, I hope it's right. But what I would love to see, and I think there's a few people that are really key factors. I mean, there's lots of veterans coming to this award show. Like, obviously, Sandra Bullock, Meryl Streep, you know, Julia Roberts, Kate Blanchett. But I think if I was going to go through the list, the risk taker in that category would probably be Sandra Bullock to me. I really think that she always kind of hits home runs. And maybe it's because, well, she's been around the scene for so long. She really knows how to put a good look on for the red carpet. But she is also a risk taker. And, you know, this award season, we saw her in some color block dresses, and we saw her in this gorgeous metallic green dress for a Screen Actors Guild. And I think that she's going to continue with that trend. I think she's really the one that looks different from everyone else on the red carpet. And I think we might see her in some Jean-Baptiste Valli, maybe one of, because his spring summer collection is just all about the color blocking and vivid colors. So I think we might see her in a risk-taking dress. And then, you know, I have Lupita Nyong'o, who from 12 Years a Slave. Like, I feel like she really can do no wrong right now. She's hitting home runs all kinds. And, you know, she is obviously an African-American woman, and she can pull off any color under the spectrum, and she really has been playing with that. So I love the fact that she really takes risks with colors. Obviously, they look gorgeous on her, and I think that she's a person to look out for because, again, like I said, everything she's wearing just is beautiful. So I'm saving my favorite designer for her, Ellie Saab. I think that any of the spring collection from this designer would honestly look stunning on her, and she'd look like the Cinderella of the ball. So I definitely think that she'll take a risk. Those are probably my two for risk taking, but then Amy Adams is kind of like one of those people that everybody always watches just because she's so stunning. I find just, she's like your all American kind of average girl, but she likes to show her skin and she loves color. So I think that she's another one who, you know, could be a little bit risque. She takes it down, like shows a lot of cleavage and a lot of skin. And I always wait for her on the red carpet. So yeah, those are my three, I think.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned Lupita, and obviously, you know, she's a woman of color and she has such gorgeous skin tone. What do you say about, you know, the actresses that are of color? In a way, do they have more of a color palette for themselves? Like, because they just have such gorgeous skin tone. Not that, you know, the Caucasians don't either, but it just seems like they're just glowing. They just look so fantastic.
Well, I have to agree with you. I feel like, you know, women of color just, it just shines whatever they wear. I mean, they can pull off a lot of different spectrums of color and textures as well. I think like glitz and glamour shines a little bit brighter on them. But that being said, I mean, there's so much range this year in terms of shades of pastels. So that's probably going to work in their favor for sure. But that's not to say that there isn't as much selection for everyone else, because there's such a range in all the designers. Everyone's doing something a little bit different. I mean, I know I mentioned Ellie Saab and Zuhair Maran. Those are kind of like your glamour guys who, honestly, any girl would just die to wear any of their gowns. But you also have, you know, Valentino, and you have Armani Privé, and you have like all these people that are the go-to guys that really produce gorgeous colors. So like, we've seen a lot of red on the red carpet, and red is a color that looks good on probably most people, same as royal blue, and a lot of these deep greens. So I think that those are colors that are really versatile. So, but they do have a little bit of an advantage. I'm not going to lie to you, Kel.
Do you ever find, Parmel, that people or, you know, actresses, whatever, they're, and even their wardrobe team, their glam squad, if you will, sometimes miss the mark when it comes to, you know, not necessarily what they're wearing? Like, they may have a really interesting gown, but then the color just doesn't work. Like, I think if I remember correctly, it was a couple of years ago that Anne Hathaway, I think it was her.
Yes.
Like, she had this, like a peach number, like a skin tone,
yes,
almost.
I totally remember exactly which dress you're talking about.
And I just feel like she's so...
It was for Les Mis, right?
Yeah.
Her,
yes. And I just felt like it totally missed the mark because she's
totally
already pale. Yes. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's always tough because, yes, they have a glam squad, but also they also have an opinion of their own. And I remember her talking about the dress afterwards and saying, I forget who the designer was, but it had a little bow in the back, and it was like this very light shade of pink, if not peach. And, you know, I felt so bad for her because all award season, she really was knocking it out of the park. And then Oscar night came along and it was like, wah, wah, wah. You know, like she missed it. But she said she really loved it. It was between that and Another Dress and she really loved it. So, I mean, at the same time, you have to kind of say, well, you really loved it. And maybe in a way, who cares what anyone has to say? The pressure on them is just, you know, enormous to pull through. And sometimes they take risks and they have an opinion and they maybe don't follow their glam squad, or they do. And that's not always the best case scenario either. Cause even, Zoe, I always mess up her last name. You want to help
me
here, Kel?
Is it, Zaldana? That one?
Zaldana, I think.
Yeah.
Zaldana. Last award show or two award shows ago, I forget which one, I think it was Golden Globes, a designer made a dress personally for her and sent it. And, you know, I feel like, what are they supposed to say? No, I'm not going to wear it when someone, you know, designs it for them, even if it might be a little bit far off, you know, it's a little bit tough. But yeah, there always are those dresses that totally miss. But you got to give them points for trying. Sometimes people try to take risks and I appreciate that. I think it's nice to be a little bit different on the red carpet.
Well, it's funny because, like, you know, I think back to, what was it, like the late 80s when that iconic dress from Cher, when she looked like a statue herself, you know?
Yeah.
And in a way, like, I appreciate that risk because that was like a real risk and almost like the Jennifer Lopez Grammy dress that everyone still talks about 10 years later. But it's funny. And it's funny, though, because, like, with that Anne Hathaway dress, I feel like, not that she was obviously trying to be risky, but it's like she really missed it on that color. You know what I mean? Like it was just bad. Yeah. And I'm like, how do you not know? Like even I know, and I'm not a fashion expert, as we all know. So okay. That's
I guess we'll have to leave that for her to find out.
I guess
so. But, I mean, she's done so much better since.
Well, that's correct.
It's like Jennifer Lawrence. She just pisses me off every award show, this chick. Like, I have to tell you that I just really am tired of seeing her in white and strapless numbers. Like if I have to see this girl in one more white dress, I just literally want to tour her and be like, listen, girl, can we just get married or something, but just stop with the strapless white dresses already.
Right.
Enough. You're young. Take a hint from your BFF Taylor Swift and wear something cool and risky.
Right.
Because she got it right one, I think it was her first Oscars, where she was wearing that red Valentino dress, and she looked gorgeous. You know, she got it totally right. And then after that, I don't know, she has like wedding envy or something. I don't know.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is our fashion expert, Parmal Gahunia. And you can follow her on Twitter now, which is awesome, at Fashionista403. I wanted to ask you this, and I think this is, it just sort of came to me, but I wanted to, you know, sort of see what you think. Obviously, most of these actresses, if not all of them, are always in these gowns, right? Whether it's short or long or what have you. Would you be shocked if one of them ever showed up in a pantsuit? Because if I take you back to the 1994 Oscars, Janet Jackson, also a woman of color, she was nominated for Best Song. And she was actually, this was back in the day when they actually still let those nominees perform, you know, to have a bit of musical entertainment during the
Oscars. That's right, yeah.
And she was in this gorgeous white pantsuit. And it was so shocking.
I actually remember that.
Do you remember that?
I believe Celine Dion did it as well.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. But, like, would you,
an award show.
Do you think a nominee would ever show up in a pantsuit? Or is that just, like, the hugest faux pas? Because Janet was obviously a nominee, but not as a leading actress.
I personally don't think it's a faux pas at all. Because Armani Privé's spring couture collection is a lot of beautiful, like, palazzo, intricate, like, details. Palazzo pants, with beautiful like lace or embellishment on them. So I honestly think someone like Meryl Streep would probably be able to pull that off and look like stupid glamorous in it. You know what I mean? Like she would just be, cause she has this effortless kind of look about her and just everybody, like anything she wears is always very classy. Mm-hmm. So I think she could definitely pull that off and I don't think it would be a faux pas at all. I think she would be applauded for it if anything. Yeah, okay. And it is a big trend this year, the palazzo and the pantsuit, so I could definitely see it on the red carpet. If not for a major nominee, like a presenter or, you know, just a celeb that was coming to, I think that they would definitely, you know, not everybody wants to wear a gown all the time.
Well, I can tell you, if I was there, like, I get that they sort of have to, quote unquote, but like,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's so funny because you always hear people that say, oh, they'd rather be at home in their pajamas. Like, you hear celebrities say that they would rather be home in their pajamas watching the event.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
if you could wear like a pantsuit and actually be comfortable and have an In-N-Out burger after, like, I think mm-hmm. go for it.
Well, if you're Sandra Bullock, you're probably going to have one anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, I know we sort of talked about colors briefly, but what do you think the main color trend could be this year?
We're seeing a lot of the blue. Royal blue is just endless, and so are shades of green. So we saw like lots of like metallic greens, and I think that the color trend is going to be, as much as white isn't a color, white,
okay.
blue, and probably lots of greens, but I'm hoping to see more pastels just because all of the runway shows for spring couture are just gorgeous with the range of pastels, and the actual gowns themselves seem to be like, especially too, I think Suher Moran and Ellie Saab and a few others, I think it was even Valentino's collection, that had just this beautiful garden-like feeling to their gowns. They just, the embellishment kind of mimicked vines and, you know, beautiful like odes to nature. I feel that I would just love to see any of those gowns on the runway, on the red carpet, as well as, you know, all this beautiful tulle and feathers. And I think there's just so much going on for spring fashion that it would be hard to not get a little bit carried away and, you know, have a little bit of glitz and embellishment and the intricacy of this floral inspiration that everyone is kind of tapping into this season. I think it would be really hard for anyone not to wear that. So I think in terms of colors, and I'm also looking for textures, I think that the lace, the jewels, like I keep saying, they're going to be there. And that's what's going to blow us away more than the color, more than the solid kind of dresses that we've been seeing for a long time. I think it's going to be all about the details this time.
Now, we don't always spend sort of too much time talking about the guys, because obviously it's usually some variation of a tux that they're wearing, and a lot of them just play
right.
super safe, and it's just the tux. Like, it's pretty much, like, they all look like they're wearing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously there are some guys that are willing to be a little bit left of center, like we talked about earlier with some of the women. And I would say, like, in the past, that could have been like a Jamie Foxx. Do you think we're going to have guys this year that might pull something like a Crushed Velvet or something?
Yeah, I totally think so. Actually, Crushed Velvet. So my two people that I think are going to do this are Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto.
Okay.
Just because those are the two that I've been watching all awards season and have felt that they have really come out of their shell. They don't really wear, Matthew McConaughey did wear a Crushed Velvet jacket. It was in emerald green and it had like a black lapel. So he didn't wear a traditional tux. It was still a tuxedo. He still had a white shirt with a bow tie, tuxedo pants, but he didn't wear a matching jacket. And I believe that was at the SAG Awards. So I think it was a nice change. And he was the one that I remembered the most on the red carpet. And he looked just so cool next to his wife. I believe they were both wearing Dolce & Gabbana that night, so he just knocked it out of the park. And then Jared Leto, I believe it was, if I'm not mistaken, the Golden Globes, where he wore, you know, a long penguin-style jacket, and he wore a top hat with it. I thought, like, it just looked so cool that it was hard to, it was hard for me to, you know, remember anybody else when he did something so kind of young and fresh with his long hair. He looked like rock star, a little bit kind of Guns N' Roses-esque, but it was totally cool. I dug it. And I hope he does something very different for the Oscars as well, because it's nice. I mean, everyone loves a guy in a suit, you know, James Bond look, but it's nice for them to get creative too. I think I appreciate it. So it's cool.
Now I have a two-part sort of final question for you. Which designers do you want to see on the red carpet this year? And who do you think is going to be best dressed?
Oh, Kelly, that's going to be a hard one. I think, okay. I mean, I anticipated this. So if I'm going to, you know, be a betting lady, like I said, I think Amy Adams for American Hustle is going to wear Valentino. I think Kate Blanchett, I have this gut feeling that, I would love to see, she could look good with a bag over her head, but I mean, let's be honest, I want to see her in maybe Naeem Khan. Like, she would just look gorgeous in that. You know, I feel like best dress, I want to give it to someone new. I want to give it to Lupita Na-Young. I think she's going to take it, honestly. I think that the contenders are strong for her. It could be Amy Adams. You know, Kate Blanchett's always on the best dress list. Sandra mm-hmm. Bullock, too. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Lawrence isn't on mine, but usually is on everyone else's. But I think it's going to be her. Yeah, Lupita Nyong'o. I think it's going to be her. She's going to take it away. She's going to take our breath away, actually. And I think she's going to be the Cinderella, like I said, of the ball. She's just going to be a showstopper. So, and I hope she wears like Elie Saab, maybe, or Zuhair Mehran. Those are my two favorite for spring. And I think any of their dresses, literally, she could take any single dress that they have and just be a knockout in it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for this, Parmal. We really appreciate it. And we cannot wait to hear what you think after this is all said and done.
Awesome, Kelly. Enjoy the Oscars.
Thank you very much. That was our fashion expert, Parmal Gohania. For more fashion tips, make sure to check her out for Fashion Friday right here on the Kelly Alexander Show Facebook page. And of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Fashionista403.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Do you think that the best movie will win an Oscar this year at the Academy Awards? There's actually a lot more that goes into getting the win than artistic merits alone. To give us the inside scoop about what really goes on inside the Hollywood machine is veteran entertainment journalist Reba Merrill, who is an Oscar voter herself and has spent over 20 years in the publicity trenches. Reba, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us about your career and what it involved, you know, being inside this Hollywood machine for so many years?
Well, originally, can I just say how I got there? I got there because I kept getting fired from local television shows because I was considered too old. And so I realized that the only way I could keep working is that no one could see that I was an old lady. And so I don't know if you know anything about a press junket. You saw it in Notting Hill. It's where the star sits down, and then every 10 minutes, a journalist comes by and does an interview, and they're promoting their movie.
Yep.
And I had been doing that for the television station I was working for, and it's by invitation only, and I was never going to get an invitation. I didn't have a television show. But I sat down in a private room at a very big studio with a free telephone and called television stations across the country. And I collected 55 stations and I became their producer. And that's how I got to Hollywood to interview movie stars.
Wow. And when would that have been?
Well, I started the collection in 82. I got my first job to prove that the 55 stations would play it in 83. And by 84, I had to work for companies to prove this. So by 84, I get my first job for my own company.
Okay. And how did you actually become an Academy Award voter? That's something I've always wondered how that works.
Well, this again is not only by invitation, it's even scarier than that. First you have to work 8 years in the career that you picked within Hollywood, meaning if you're a director, you have to work for 8 years, unless you get an Oscar nomination. But I'm in the PR branch, and we don't have Oscar nominations. So I had to work 8 years in my branch, meaning that I was doing publicity. And the only publicity I really did was video publicity, and I really considered myself more of a producer, interviewer, than I considered myself a publicist.
Okay.
You read my book, you'll find out that they're amazed that the studios even hired me because I never asked conventional questions. But, okay. The thing is that I was nominated by the president of marketing at Universal, Marvin Antonowski, because I had worked for him for quite a few years. And Judy Schwam, who was a senior VP at Columbia Pictures, they had to nominate me to my branch. Then my branch submitted, I had to submit who I was. And it just so happens in 1988, I worked on two Oscar-winning films. One of them won. I worked on Ironweed with Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson, and then I worked on a little film by the name of Rain Man. And you know, that's Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman. And there were, I think, about 197 people that applied that year, which was 1993, mm-hmm. to be considered to be an Oscar voter in the PR branch, and they took three. And when I was called and said that I was one of the three, I nearly fainted because I said to Judy, who happened to call me, and I said, well, who made this decision? And there is a board, It's like joining a sorority.
Wow.
You know, you have to be voted in. And so I said, who's on the board? And she named the 12 people that voted me in. And I started to laugh, and she says, why are you laughing? And I said, I didn't work for one of them. I don't know if that was good or bad. I never worked for any one of those people.
That's awesome.
They voted me in.
That's fantastic. Now, you know, I think a lot of us that are not in Hollywood, you know, obviously there's entertainment shows for a reason, because a lot of us are obviously interested in what goes on, and we're sort of mesmerized by celebrity and all that sort of stuff. But I think some people, again, who don't really follow the ins and outs of the business may actually believe on some level that voting is fair when it comes to the Oscars. But I guess on certain levels, it really isn't.
Well, the publicity machine during Oscars is very interesting. The big movies hire big companies to do big promotions for their film. This has nothing to do with us getting the DVDs. This has a lot to do with parties. One party that I went to, I can't say, let me not say the film, but it was at the Polo Lounge. And it was studded with big celebrities.
Wow.
All of them, I think, happened to be Oscar voters, but that we're not supposed to say that. The parties are unbelievable. The lunches, the dinners. I've never been invited to a breakfast, but usually lunches and dinners, always star-studded. And I have to tell you, for somebody who spent all that years in Hollywood, I'm still impressed when I go to a star-studded event and I sit down with somebody so famous I nearly fainted. And so that's how it starts. It starts with parties. It goes into Q&As, you know, with a screening. And then comes the subtle little digs, subtle, that there could be a question about a film. And an example I can give you is how an Oscar was lost on the film Hurricane. Because once it was nominated, there was this subtlety that possibly the story was not true like it was supposed to be, and it really was fictional. And it just went on and on and on. I mean, you see it now. Isn't it strange that Woody Allen's film is nominated for 3 Academy Awards and all of a sudden all this stuff came out from 20 years ago? You tell me.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And I wanted to ask you, you know, we talk about these, I guess, PR campaigns. Do PR people and management teams or agents involve themselves in, like, negative campaigning? Like, maybe that's what you're talking about with Woody Allen's situation.
It's negative, but you're not. Woody Allen's is more out there and in your face. Most of them are very subtle. No one wants to possibly be accused of doing something that isn't above board. Ha ha.
Right.
So they really don't brag about what they do. The Academy has tried to stamp that out because there have been campaigns of absolutely, let's destroy the competition. And that did go on for quite some time. And the Academy really, really put their foot down because it reflects badly on all of us. I mean, let's face it, anybody that gets a chance to work in Hollywood, we really do feel like it was a gift. If you make it there, it is one of the most exciting places to be able to do the craft that you love, whether you're an actor, a writer, director, or even somebody like me who got the chance to interview the most famous people in the world. I sat there no more than 2 feet away from them.
Right.
And I cannot tell you what a thrill it was. I was doing something I loved in a palace. That's what Hollywood was. It's a palace.
Joining us on the show is veteran entertainment journalist Reba Merrill, who has also authored the book Nearly Famous, Secrets, Lies, and Addiction, about what goes on inside Hollywood. And you can learn more about her and the book on her website, rebamerrill.com. Can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, how much money maybe goes into these Oscar campaigns? Obviously quite a bit, I would imagine, but it probably is mind-blowing to people like us.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, that's probably one of the better-kept secrets. I have no idea. I have no idea what kind of money. I mean, in Montreal, I'm sure you're seeing ads for all the Oscar-nominated films.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, down here, we are inundated. I must get daily 3 magazines devoted to the Oscars, the awards, the award wrap, the envelope, Variety, The Reporter, I get them every single day. They are loaded with ads. They are loaded with testimonials. I don't know. I've never worked on an Oscar campaign, so I'm not privy to it. I do know that if they would ask me to do a Q&A, I could get between $250 and $500 for me to sit down and do an interview.
Wow.
That's all I know.
Okay. I wanted to ask you as well. Obviously, you've been an Academy voter for a while now. Have you noticed as the years have gone by that the process is getting better, or is it worse than what it was?
Well, this year is a very interesting time. For the first time ever, we got DVDs of all the foreign films. And the reason I'm saying that is that even last year, you could not vote for a foreign film unless you went to a theater, which is usually the Academy has two theaters, either one of them, at a certain time, and saw it and then voted. That's all changed. Everything is going to be done electronically. So on Friday, I got all the foreign films. I had already seen all but one. I got the documentary shorts. I got the documentary longs. I got the animated shorts. And I got the animated live-action shorts. And I'm sitting home watching all this stuff. And I'm just going to vote electronically sometime after the 14th. So when you talk about a change, this is probably the biggest change, because usually everything that the Academy dictated is that you must go to a theater to see it. And then if you're really desperate, they would send you the film on DVD.
Do you have rules that you have to follow, Reba, with regards to how you judge a category, or is it really like what's in your heart? Because that, I think, is another question that someone would always wonder, like, how do you actually judge these films?
I judge what appeals to me. I used to, when I first got in, oh, I shouldn't say this, but my son worked on an Oscar-nominated film. He's a music editor, and I voted for that film.
Okay.
But most of the time, I really just vote.
Okay. Do you find, though, as well, I wanted to ask you this, you know, because we're all human, and it's hard to sometimes remain unbiased, I guess, if you will, but do you find that you get caught up in any of the hype with regards to the actors and who might deserve the win? Because sometimes I've noticed, as like a third party observer, sometimes I feel like the actor that maybe should get it in a given year doesn't get it, but might get it 2 years later, almost as like a make good. Do you find that that happens?
That's so interesting you should say that. How about the reverse? How about the actor that should have gotten it and didn't, which is Russell Crowe?
Okay.
Or A Beautiful Mind. He should have gotten it. He won the BAFTA award for that. And then in his acceptance speech, they cut him off. This is from London. And he went into a tirade and screamed and yelled at the producer who cut him off of his thanks speech. And we Oscar voters hadn't voted yet. You don't thumb your nose at the people that you work with. And he was rude to somebody publicly. Does the person that's supposed to win win? I don't know. I think what I love about this particular year is there's no front runner. That, to me, is the most exciting. It's a lot more fun than the year of Lord of the Rings, when it won every single nomination. It was nominated for a lot, and it won a lot. This year, I can't even tell you who's a front runner anymore. Because each guild, you know, like the Writers Guild, they picked Gravity. Somebody else, the Producers Guild, picked American Hustle. It's just all over the place. And those guild people, some of them are Academy members. Our Academy is broken down into each craft. So if you're a writer, the first round of nominations, the writers only nominate writers. My group in publicity, the PR branch, I only can nominate in the first round the best film. And then when the full ballot comes out, then I can vote for everything.
Wow.
But I do vote my heart. I only voted my son's movie. Just so happens it won. But the idea is, I did vote my son's movie. I don't do that anymore. I don't think it's, okay, I'm a mother. What do you want?
Right. Do you think, Reba, that, you know, a lot of people get swayed, though, either by the publicity machine or, you know, some vested interest?
I think vested interest wins over promotion.
Okay.
I honestly do. all the promotion in the world is not going to sway you to vote for something. Being a mother, your best friend is nominated, that might sway you. Come on, we're human.
Right. So do you think then, in the grand scheme of things, that it's fair at all? Because I almost want to compare it to, like, you know, the Olympics are going on, and I always find that there's craziness that goes on in the figure skating world. It always seems like there's some controversy with regards to judging, and I feel like the Oscars is kind of the same thing.
Well, judging is judging. You know, one person can see something in a film, and another person can see something else. I mean, it's at the same film. It depends on how it affected you, at what time you saw it. I mean, at this point in the screening process, I am down to the 5 documentaries. Otherwise, I have seen everything. So I have 5 documentaries, full length, from 90 minutes on to screen. I have no view of any of them. It's the same thing with the shorts. I had no idea what I was getting into. 2 of them have knocked me out of my socks, and I'm going to have to screen them again to see which one that I'm going to vote for. I hope I'm pretty fair and objective. I mean, I really try to be. And I think most of us are, unless you worked on a film and you vote for yourself. But that's like an election.
Right.
If you were running for office, you would vote for yourself. So it's hard. I think it's more like a political campaign than the Olympics, to tell you the truth.
Something I wanted to ask you, and I'm not sure what your thoughts will be, but you sort of mentioned it a little bit with Russell Crowe. Do you think that either people that are super grumpy or mean or arrogant, and then conversely super sweet and everyone loves them, do you think they get sort of maybe dismissed from the voting? Because I've always wondered what went on with Madonna back in the day with Evita, and the fact that she won the Golden Globe but wasn't even nominated for an Oscar, which I found very shocking at the time. And then conversely, you know, like you have someone like Sandra Bullock, who is such a sweetie, and I think almost everyone loves her, and she has been nominated and obviously has won before. But do you think sometimes because she is so sweet that people are like, no, I'm not going to nominate her?
No. She just hadn't done the work that deserved a nomination. Let's be fair. That year that she won for The Blind Side, she did a movie called All About Steve. I promise you, you don't want to rent it. It was the worst movie I had ever seen her in. And she won a Razzie Award, which is an award for the worst actress in the worst film that year.
Mm-hmm. And she showed up to pick up the award, I think.
Yes, she did.
Actually,
she walked off with the real Razzie instead of the replica, but she gave it back. I mean, I don't think her personality had anything to do with it. I really don't. And let me tell you something about Russell. Russell learned a very good lesson, and he's not like that anymore.
Okay.
But no, I don't think they're you know, when they're absolutely rude and nasty, believe me, that is taken into consideration. But being sweet, with Sally Field saying, "You love me, you really love me," come on.
Okay.
I think that matters. Can I tell you one Montreal story just for you, if you don't mind, an Oscar story? It just came out in the press here, is that the big money behind the Dallas Buyers Club, which is nominated not only for Best Actor, but for Best Film, the money came from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 weeks before production was to start shooting, they pulled out. And it's really sad because they would have been invited to the Oscars this year. Not only invited, they would have gotten to walk the red carpet, and they would have gotten great seats. Oscar-nominated films and actors, they get great seats. I'm going to the Oscars this year. You will never see me because I walk the other side of the red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do the Oscar shuffle, which means I walk so slowly, hopefully some movie star is being interviewed on the other side, and you catch my face. But the truth is, and I don't get good seats, but I'm going to go because my husband wants to go this year.
Excellent.
I don't always go to the Oscars. I really like watching them at home so that when somebody I voted for wins, I could cry.
Very good. That's awesome, Reba. Now, before I let you go, can you tell us where people can get a copy of your book, Nearly Famous?
I'm thrilled. I'm on Amazon right now in the hardback and in the Kindle. And there's a review up there. I just got reviewed by a professional reviewer, and he said, or she said, it was good. And so I'm really excited. It's really a story of not just Hollywood. It's how I went when nobody wanted me. to how I made somebody want me. Because no is probably the most frightening word when, and it's not just as a woman, but when you get it constantly, you start to feel like you've lost your self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
And so my book, Nearly Famous, only because I was the only person in the room that wasn't famous. Everybody else was, except me.
Wow. Reba, thank you so much for your time. It's been so fascinating to speak with you. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me, Kelly. I loved it. Anytime, call me. I would just love to talk privately.
Excellent. That is veteran entertainment journalist Reba Merrill, who has also authored the book Nearly Famous, Secrets, Lies, and Addiction about what goes on inside Hollywood. And you can learn more about it on her website, RebaMerrill.com. Thanks so much for hanging out on the show with us this week. We really appreciate your time. And a big thank you going out to our guests, Gray Drake, Parmal Gahunia, and Reba Merrill. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Albert Einstein. Out of clutter, find simplicity. From discord, find harmony. In the middle of difficulty, lies opportunity. As always, thanks again for hanging out. Don't forget to check us out on our social media, on Twitter, at Kay Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and all of our interviews, of course, on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.